afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio on August the 30th, 2020. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor... Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. And Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. All things tractors and mowers and service and parts, they got it all going on down there. Give them a call, 226-9226, or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Dun-da-da.
There you go.
Okay, so swiftly... you can always find us at wethepeopleradio.us. You can listen live during the show if for some reason you don't catch us on the local radio station here at KCNR. You could listen later in the afternoon because Robert always cuts out our free enterprise moments there, a.k.a. commercials, and makes the show just a little bit shorter for you. Sometimes tidies up things that we've fumbled, say, perhaps, maybe... Sort of. He's like the little guy. All of us that are old, we remember the fractured fairy tales. Remember the guy in the back that had the little broom, you know?
Sweep, sweep, sweep.
That's Robert. Maybe you can include that in the video for people that are watching it on video. They can be reintroduced to fractured fairy tales. True crowd pleaser. Let's see. That's it. So that's at wethepeopleradio.us. And during the break... I chatted with our guest, William Kay, on the real telephone instead of on the air. I do love to put people on the spot, but, you know, it is kind of rude. So I asked him if he would be willing to come on next week as well because, well, let's face it, we've barely started his entire topic.
Anything can happen in a week.
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he said.
It's true. We were talking about, you know, the possibility of things just totally going sideways with armed groups and whatnot in this country. We had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a family member who is ex-Green Beret.
You're never an ex-Green Beret.
Well, you're never an ex, yeah. I'd probably get
just
smacked for
a,
saying that.
What is it, not a practicing Green Beret?
Not active Green Beret. but he is still connected with the security industry in this country, and we were talking about the same topic. And one thing he said that really kind of rang home was, "You have to realize that in this country, there are thousands of retired special forces folks out there. They are watching this as well, and they are all connected." They all keep in touch. They all have connections in the security industry. And if things really got bad, he said, they will mobilize because they took an oath. And those are the kind of folks that are going to – it's going to be a game changer. If that is unleashed on the American people, it will be a revolution because they don't mess around.
Are they coordinated? Are they of one mind politically?
Well, many of them are. According to him, they are. A lot of them. They don't want this country to go socialism. And that's where they're all of like mind. This is not a socialistic society. We're a free nation. And that's...
I don't for a second think the Democratic Party is socialist. Like Joe Biden and these people. I mean, you can call them commie all you want. That's why I encourage people to look at things like, you know, the Revolutionary Black Panthers. There is a communist movement in the United States.
Oh, sure.
Hitherto, it has been very marginalized. But, you know, you're blowing it if you start calling Joe Biden a communist or the Democratic Party a communist. They are not. There is a fringe out there that is quite estranged from the Democratic Party that actually is an armed revolutionary group, armed revolutionary organization.
Can we just call them commie lovers?
What's that?
Can we just call them commie lovers?
No, Biden and these guys, they were anti-communist war hawks all through the Cold War. They were not at all involved in the communist movement
That's true.
It's like when Trump got elected, everybody's running around, oh, he's a Nazi, blah, blah, blah. No, he wasn't. There's no connection between him and the Nazi movement whatsoever.
No.
So there's a danger of hyperbole and start calling people names that they really aren't. And the worst part of it is you lose sight of the fact that there are actually, there is actually American Nazis that are armed and what have you. They're out there. They're fringe. They're marginalized. I strongly suspect they're heavily infiltrating these Trump 2020 groups. That's part of the danger. You know, by and large, I don't think the people that go to Trump 2020 rallies are with sort of the racist right fringe, but they're there. They're there. They're recruiting.
Well, you always have. Let's face it. If you look at the political spectrum, it's easy to look left and right. But we all know that the real spectrum is a circle. And if you go far enough right, you wind up on the left. You go far enough left, same thing. They all kind of wind up in the crazy zone. So, but that's not. Thank goodness, it's not the majority of people. However, I think you're right. You got to watch it that you're not actually helping them by refusing to admit they might be there, or saying the other guys are all crazy.
I'm saying, well, part of the, I think the Trump strategy was to try to red bait the Democrats again and try to portray them in a certain color. I don't think a lot of people are going to buy that. If you really look at the core Democratic Party, these are very wealthy people. They have no interest in any sort of revolutionary socialist agenda that's going to expropriate their assets at all. It's just an epithet. It's just an insult that people are hurling at them, and
except
it's muddying the waters
it.
And confusing the situation.
But see, the thing we see from here is that they're paying for it. You look at these. Well, look at guys like it's not money involved, but power involved. Look at the mayor there in Portland. He supports these guys all the time. You know, oh, they're just peaceful protesters. He goes down there and gets. They slug him or shove him down or scare him or chase him around. Now they're at his
front door.
Yeah, at his front door. And so, you know,
he's enabling them. He's enabling the Democrats.
Yeah.
Remember, again, my theory was the strategy was to ramp up this stuff in the prelude to the election. And they say Trump equals mayhem, what have you. He's actually seems to be calling their bluff on it now.
Yeah.
Like, just at the time when the Democrats are starting to step away from this thing, like, what have we done? Trump seems to be charging into this.
Yeah, because guys like the mayor that have totally supported them are now looking at it going, uh-oh. Now they're trying to, they want to recall him. Now they want to recall him, and I thought, he was their guy. Like, he has helped them have, 60-something days of riots, and now they want to recall him. I'm thinking,
well, I'm looking at the policies these folks want to enact. I mean, you know, a lot of socialism, and the Democrats are behind it. I mean, they're all for it. They want to have free
everything. I have a different definition of socialism. I have a traditional definition of socialism, which would mean, you know, that the banks would be public property. Originally, socialism was all about economics. It was all about people who wanted the government to control the banking sector, the government to control the commanding heights of the economy. You don't hear any of that from the Democrats. They're corporatists. Yeah, they're opposed to capitalism, for sure. But they have a vision of a society where, you know, believe me, that the assets of the ultra-rich, they are not going to be touched. And, you know, they don't believe in competition. They want to cartelize all aspects of the economy. They want a land of 100,000 regulations of sort of cementing down the society, but they do not, under any circumstance, want to expropriate the assets of the big money. In my mind, you got to make that distinction. And it's inappropriate to call the Democrats socialists. They're actually a form of what they used to call social fascism or corporatism. But they are a universe apart from the really radical far left, pretty much marginalized and hitherto marginalized and subordinated. But what we're seeing now is, go ahead.
Well, I'm just looking at their platform. I'm looking at Bernie Sanders. A lot of what he stood for is flat out socialism, and I think Biden's taken a lot of his leads from that group. I mean, I don't think we can deny that. And maybe that's where they're losing control. But his handlers, I think Bernie Sanders is a major player there.
Debatable. I mean, that's certainly what the Republicans are trying to put out that match. It's almost really don't want to run against Biden and Harris. They want to run against AOC and Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
But I view them, certainly they've got a following within the Democratic Party, and Biden has never pre-election, he's not going to explicitly denounce them. But how many times did the Democratic Party burn Bernie? I mean, they did
Every time.
Yeah.
But they're definitely
There's a left faction in the Democratic Party. There's an authentic left faction there,
mm-hmm.
and if they want to get out the votes, you know, you really got to appeal to the working class. Yeah, they're a huge portion of the population, and they have pocketbook issues. And you might, like, I live in Canada, right? We got Medicare here. It's not socialist at all. The doctors are private practitioners, and they just bill the government. There's a lot of problems with it, but it's not the end of the world. It wouldn't be the end of America as well. And a lot of the other BS that AOC and Bernie Sanders support, they support a libertarian immigration policy. Like, just open the borders, let
right.
it rip.
Right.
That's
yeah,
what
no
that's
kidding.
About. You know, the American working class isn't, you know, cheering that on. And also all this green crap, that's basically eco-fascist. I mean, it's bonkers that America would be considering any other fuel source other than coal, uranium, or natural gas. You know, that they're going to go to, that's, where's the socialism there? That's just, it's a completely alien thing that the Europeans are imposing on the Americans.
Right.
So a lot of what they come up with, some of it's leftist, no doubt about it. They've got to appeal to the people where they're at, and there's a lot of people hurting. They never really get to the real issues like housing and stuff like that, or other issues like that. No, they're bogus. These are sort of, I view them as sort of bogus leftists. The real left is utterly marginalized in America. And what you've got are these corporatists, these social fascists, these people masquerading as leftists, that are playing a role there. But I think you're missing the ball by a foot and a half if you're calling Joe Biden a communist.
No, I know he's not a communist. He
actually has dementia, so I don't think he knows
what he is.
Be a socialist and have dementia. on that happy note,
not capable of any coherent ideology.
I was just going to say, I don't think he's going to be the leader of the band. I'm not sure he can do the. I'm not sure he can. They would give him the little.
The whole element around him, like, you know, the Clintons, these people.
Yeah,
this is the New York City banking community. These are not leftists at all.
True.
You know, they are
all right,
going to grind the working class into filth.
Break. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And I just want you to know, Bill's been very annoying telling me when it's break time.
Keep us on track. It's my job.
All right, hit it, Ashley.
All right. Ashley, hit it.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
All around me are familiar faces.
Directly from Joe Biden's basement. I wrecked a perfectly good song.
Yeah, you did.
Sorry about that. So, we were having a little debate during the brief free enterprise moment there about the, you know, that these guys aren't really socialists. And you're totally right. They really want national control. They want the government to be in charge of everything as long as they're the government. So I'm not sure if that's a modified national control or if that's what everyone who wants national control thinks.
Oh, you're hitting the nail on the head. What I'm seeing time and time again is a lot of people, particularly, you know, sort of the American, you know, I don't like to use any of these words, conservative, liberal. They're almost all meaningless right now. But they frequently, they're worried about this sort of communist takeover. What they are seeing is there is an authoritarian state emerging. A bureaucratic authoritarian state is emerging, and that state is not going to give a damn what the American people think about anything. It's going to ram through a whole bunch of policies, and they don't care if you don't like it, because they are, at their hearts, fascists. And a true fascist believes that the common people are too stupid to even be consulted about things like economic policy and foreign policy. The authorities are going to determine these things, and the authorities are going to try to explain it to the people, but they really don't have to, because, you know, their opinion really doesn't matter. And I think a lot of Americans are seeing this happen, that they're completely losing control of the government. The government's getting larger and more powerful, and it's utterly unresponsive to them.
Well, the one piece of this that we shouldn't gloss over, because something that happens down here and something I hear a lot from people is that we need term limits. And this is a total pet peeve of mine. We need term limits. And it's like, okay, let's think that through. Because with term limits, the only thing you have limited is your vote. You now don't get to have whoever you want representing you. You now get the bureaucracy of the executive branch, who's there for 30-plus years with no term limit, to run everything because your elected officials don't know enough or have enough longevity to be good at it, to represent you. If you don't have anybody good running, you elect the guy that's already there. That happens a lot.
That is a valid point. It's a good argument for term limits for bureaucrats.
Exactly.
But I'm a supporter of term limits for politicians, because if you don't do that, the incumbent ultimately is going to start winning every election.
Everybody's in favor of term limits for people that are not in their district. Yeah. Like, we hear it a lot up here in Northern California. We want term limits because we want to get rid of Nancy Pelosi. I'm like, oh, are you moving to San Francisco? No. Oh, okay. So who's going to elect her replacement? Oh, yeah, the same people who elected her. Maxine Waters. She's in by 80% every year. It's like, the people you really have to look at, the folks that are blowing it are not the politicians who are getting reelected. They're not voting for themselves, except for maybe one vote or two on a good day. But you're looking at the electorate. It's the electorate that is the problem. They're not doing their homework. They're not promoting good people. People say everybody in office is a shyster and a loser and a crook and a user and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's nice. So then you look at somebody and you say, hey, you should run for office. What's the first thought? Oh, I want to be one of those. I want to be maligned and thought to be a bad person, right? So we shoot ourselves in the foot all different directions. Oh, we need term limits. Everybody who's in office is bad. And
we need good people in office.
And we need good people in office. It's like, who's psychotic now?
The reality is that you're stuck in a two-party system. It's a dreadful thing. What you're seeing in a lot of the U.S. Northeast, before the left, that's basically a one-party state now, where one party is just winning again and again. Like, the Democratic Party has won the mayoralty of Boston now for like 120 years. That's the real danger. Somehow or other, you have to break out of this two-party system. It just costs so much money to get involved in politics. You could say, okay, you should run for office, but look at how much money you have to have. And look what happens to anybody who steps out of the two-party system. Like, you don't exist.
Oh, you get slaughtered.
I'm really seeing this in Canada as well. Even just trying to post anything on the internet, trying to get people to post your writings. You know, if you're not with one of the parties, if you're not really promoting their agenda, you know, putting out their talking points to the T, they're not interested in that.
Huh. Bernie Sanders.
There's very little. What's that?
Yeah,
like Bernie Sanders. He got nowhere until he switched to Democratic Party, and then he started getting some traction. But he still gets
waxed by them all the time.
Yeah, he still gets waxed.
The thing that's tricky is if you look at it, look at California. Here's a good number for you. In California, 1 million Republicans did not vote in the election where Gavin Newsom won as the governor. Well, so for all the people who gripe about
Gavin... These are registered Republicans.
Correct. So they didn't vote because, why? Oh, yes, the other thing we like to tell ourselves all the time, to our detriment, our vote doesn't matter. Well, apparently it did matter in that election because he didn't win by 1 million votes. So that's not to say all Republicans would have voted for a Republican. I mean, I realize that. There's no all, there's no never. However, you had 1 million Republicans registered to vote who did not cast a ballot, and Gavin Newsom wins by less than 1 million. Well... That
you also got a herd of rhino politicians down there, too. I mean, a lot of times it really doesn't matter.
It depends.
You seem to be getting the same policies. It does sometimes, but certainly in Canada, we're at a point now where basically one-party state. There's two parties that have dominated the political process since Confederation. They used to be one party. They used to be called the Liberals hyphen Conservatives. Oh. And then after 40 years, they split into two parties. They've rejoined four or five times in coalitions. But you would never know, like, who's in power in terms of policies. It is just locked down. There's an inner clique of people that, you know, thoroughly dominate the federal government. And, yeah, we might as well not vote anymore.
Does Liberal and Conservative in Canada mean the same thing it does here? Is it backwards?
Generally, but these are capital. The parties are actually called the Liberal Party and the Conservative Party, capital L, capital C. One caters more to the social conservatives, but they're deathly afraid to go too far that way. And one, Liberal, you know, Liberal my arse, I mean, they are an absolutely corporatist party up the yin-yang, far more so than even the Democratic Party. They really want a thoroughgoing cartelization of the economy. They are... it all gets tangled up with this whole French English thing, but they're a highly authoritarian, elitist group of people who have an agenda for the whole country, and there's absolutely no getting rid of them. They have a lock on the eastern part of the country, and the western part of the country is absolutely marginalized and disenfranchised at this point.
Yeah, it gets back to what you said about how much it costs to be elected. I mean, you're millions and millions of dollars just for a state election.
Well, I mean, you look at, you know, where do people spend their money? You know, if there's a candidate you like, support that candidate. Work for them, support them financially, that kind of thing. There is a meaningful difference you can make, but most people say, well, everybody's corrupt. I'm not supporting anyone. Therefore, those things all happen without your say.
Yep.
I mean, that's the thing. You can't want to say, but then not participate and expect it to turn out good. I mean, you're going to have to take...
I hear you. It's important not to get dismissive of democracy at all and to completely walk away from it. I noticed that in the last French election, there were record numbers. I can't remember the statistic. It was like 8-10%, something like that. People destroyed their ballot in the ballot. Like, they walked right into the voting booth and destroyed their ballot in public.
Oh.
Maybe that's a way to go. And that was just before the yellow vest thing just about overthrew the government.
Well, you know what? What's a really good thing? One thing that they added in Nevada that's a kind of along those lines but actually makes a better statement, they added none of the above as one of the options. And, you know, rather than not voting, if you hate both candidates or all five or whatever your thing is, to check the box none of the above and have none of the above be the top vote getter, that's a powerful statement.
That sends a message.
I wholly support that. I wholly support that. And really get the message out that, you know, the broader population, we're not being represented by these parties. We're being given kind of a false choice. You got a really weird choice in the States right now. You know, when Trump first got elected, I can say that I have never been so happy with an election result in my life than when Trump got elected in 2016. I really viewed it as a triumph of the people over the elites. But he has lost my support. He's an incompetent. He's untrustworthy. He's a fraud. You know, he's lost my support. I would recommend third-party candidate, do it.
Sounds like you've been watching Chris What's-His-Face not Chris Cuomo, the other one. The one this morning.
Chris Wallace.
Chris Wallace.
Yeah.
Totally sounds like that. Okay, we've got to take a really quick break on that unhappy note. We will be right back with our guest, William Kay. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
It's all going to pot, whether we like it or not. The best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and we're all gonna miss it a lot. The whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee, just couldn't hit the spot. $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot. I got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, cause it's all going to pot.
It's my party, and I'll party if I want to, party if I want to, party.
And there you have it. It's a two-party system, and you can cry if you want to.
Playing me.
It's only fair. You know what's funny?
Yeah, sorry for the anti-Trump rant.
That's all right. You know, things happen. But, you know, one thing about it, you've got a guy who, you know, comes in out of the business world thinking, because, I mean, I'll give you an example. Our local congressman, you hear people all the time, right? If laws weren't so long and complicated, then they would be easier to follow. Like the bureaucrats would follow them, or, you know, it wouldn't be such a big problem. But all these bills are, you know, hundreds and thousands of pages, and it's so complicated, that's what the problem is. Every bill should be short. Oh, okay. Well, here's one. The Army Corps of Engineers is no longer allowed to regulate ongoing farming practices. That's it. The end. Period. That's the whole thing. And it gets added to, you know, a big bill that's got a lot of other stuff in it. But this is an amendment that's one sentence long, passed, signed by the Obama administration, because I think it was in the NDAA. And meanwhile, they're still jacking up local farmers here in Northern California. So Congressman goes, meets with the Army Corps of Engineers, has a copy of his one sentence amendment that is now part of a law. It's a law. And says, hey, you can't bother this guy anymore. This thing's been a farm for 100 years. You can't ring him out anymore. It says right here. So he pushes that over to him, and they look at that, and he said, it says you can't regulate ongoing farming practices. He's an ongoing farming practice. Oh, well, that's not the way we read it. It's like, well, I didn't see that coming. It's a different example, but that I think is how Trump saw the world. Like, you could go in and do something that is sensible, and then sensibleness would follow. And it's like, uh-oh, no. You're going to go in and be sensible and use things that work in the real world for, like, everything else. And you're going to take it into government, and it goes through the little sausage factory and comes out nonsense. And let's face it, I think we'd all get burned on that one hard.
Well, not to belabor the Trump bashing, but I recommend people, there was an interview with Rex Tillerson a while ago after he left, and mm-hmm. he said that, you know, other comments about Trump's work ethic aside, that Trump just really didn't understand the administrative machinery of government.
No, no, he didn't.
He was always ordering people to do things, and they couldn't constitutionally do it, or they couldn't legally do it. He was talking to the wrong bureaucrat, talking to the wrong cabinet minister. You know, Trump has to own that. I really don't think that he still doesn't really get it. And well, all these tweets and all this stuff, that's not what he has to do.
No, and I'll tell you the one thing that I don't know how it works in Canada, but I know here, the president has about 4,000 people when they take office that they can that are presidential appointees. They don't have to necessarily all be confirmed by the Senate, but they're people that the president can remove and replace. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's like 4,000 of them. That's a lot. Trump hardly removed a fraction of them. Now, Obama wiped them all out.
Bingo.
He hardly removed a fraction because, you know what? He was thinking, like normal people, that they were professionals and, like, in a company. If you take over as the CEO of a company, you don't fire everyone in the company and start it from scratch, for heaven's sakes.
No, you hope they carry out your wishes.
They're all professionals. You're now the new CEO. You come in. You run the company. They now, you know, basically work under your direction. And I think he wholly misunderstood how just really bad that whole thing is, you know?
Well, I got the sinking feeling with Trump. Now, kudos to him for, you know, getting out of the Paris Accord. But about a year or so into his administration, a coalition of 17 science bureaucracies financed by the federal government issued yet another one of these climate assessments, and there was another one of these over-the-top climate alarmists. Trump responds with a few tweets, sort of distancing himself from it. I thought, man, you're the boss, okay? You talk to your cabinet ministers. Some of these bureaucracies could be just shut down completely, okay? The EPA should be shut down completely.
Yeah, the problem is doing that.
He had no prepared. What's that?
Like doing that. I mean, it sounds good, and yeah, I'm not in disagreement with you. The thing is, look at even the minor changes that he makes. Oh my God, he's a fascist. He's an authoritarian. He's trying to be the king. And it's like,
he doesn't have to listen to that.
No, he doesn't.
He's no Ike Eisenhower. Ike Eisenhower was completely on top of the American government. You should read about his National Security Council. They called it marching up and down the mountain. Like every day, people would march in, report. He would know exactly where to send them, what to do. Like he was on the top of it. He was on the ball. That is simply not Donald Trump. Like he had to purge a lot of these people, yeah. And he never did.
He so, didn't, and it just seemed like it would be less disruptive, which is a nice idea, and it seems really, emotionally generous and intellectually generous to say, hey, these people will do their jobs. Look at our intelligence community. And we've done tons of shows on that. And these guys were not consummate professionals. They were consummate partisans. And
There's a deep state and there's a broad state. And it just didn't seem to me that he ever really got the handle on this. I don't think he's ever going to. Anyway, let's stop bashing Trump. Let's get back.
I would be.
A few words about.
I'll put money on a second term that they all get wiped out. I'm going to say second term. They're all gone.
Pray for a meteorite. Yeah.
There you go.
One of the things I encountered this time around doing this research, was the Ford Foundation. I actually sat there and read their 500-page 990 form.
Oh, God
bless
you.
It's an amazing read. And one of the things that I came across there was, they are funding probably 100 documentaries a year. They are the size of a Hollywood studio. And a lot of those documentaries, there's dozens that really foment black animosity towards police departments. And if people can get to the article, I give samples of four or five of them, but these are very polished, well-produced documentaries that are really designed to tug at the heartstrings of people. And when the Ford Foundation releases these, they often spend a couple of $1 million making them. They've got this array of nonprofit societies and black student unions that hold screenings of them. So these, not only do these documentaries frequently win Emmys, I came across one article and it just blew my mind how many Emmys the Ford Foundation has won, and they're never mentioned in the acceptance speeches. But they are those bankrollers behind just scores of these award-winning Emmys. Plus, they also bankroll four of the largest documentary film festivals in the United States. But they have their own network of hundreds of groups that hold showings in basements and university classrooms. After each time they release a documentary, they do that. They pass out the popcorn. After each showing of a documentary, there's a question and answer. Quite often they'll have the directors or producers travel the USA on Ford Foundation budget to promote their documentaries. They're training documentary film producers. But people really underestimate the power of documentaries. And Ford Foundation is putting them out in reams, and they've got this whole ground team that makes sure that as many students and young people of color see these as possible. And they're having a profound influence on American culture.
Well, they've also got PBS in their hip pocket, to promote all that as well.
Yeah, they are of an ilk. Yeah, they actually give a lot of money to those groups. But I was really astonished by the scale of the Ford Foundation's documentary productions. They are spending crews, $50, $100 million a year on this. And you're going through the 990 form, and it's just one documentary film producer after another. And quite often they have to get top-ups. And then once they finish producing the film, they pay them travel around the country to promote them. But, talk about profound cultural impact. Mm-hmm. That's all coming out of one organization.
Yeah, and that's an organization that has big-time recognition. People recognize the Ford Foundation, and gosh, if they...
They seem legit.
Yeah, they're legit. I mean, if they say it, that's got to be true.
I like that. Hmm.
We haven't seen anything like the Ford Foundation since these religious orders of the Middle Ages. They've completely flown the coop. Two-thirds of their assets are overseas now. They're estimated to be worth $13
billion.
Wow.
Oh, they're creating a full-service banking system in Africa. They're already pretty much tax-free, but, they've got this bank in Cayman Islands that they own now. They've completely flown the coop. They're not paying any taxes because they're a nonprofit society. They have vast assets, not that the current Board of Trustees had anything to do with accumulating that wealth. This is still Henry Ford's money. And they just, you know, because the law is you have to spend 5% of your assets every year. But they've hired professionals long ago, long before the current crop of trustees came in. They hired, you know, top shelf professional investment advisors, and they've managed to get returns far and above 5% over this time. So they can hand out $400 or $500 billion. Last year they handed out $800 million. They're still not losing money. Their overall assets are still growing. So I don't see that organization ever coming to an end.
No,
they're autonomous.
Well, that's amazing.
And, you know, they have assets all over the world now. And they're autonomous and they're devious. And they are effectively now a black movement organization. Six of the 12 trustees are black. There's two or three other trustees that are non-black but have histories or CVs of just involvement in the black movement for decades. And they are pumping enormous amounts of money into what are basically sort of black conscious or sort of black obsessed nonprofit societies, and they're generating all of these black obsessed documentaries. They are really a divisive and negative force in the United States. If you really want to get away from racism once and for all, this isn't the way to do it.
No, this is just pounding the drum. I mean, it's you're right.
It's some of it's kind of hard to explain in a way. You look at it and you think, how did we ever get here? You know?
This is how.
How did we ever let it go so far?
But behind the scenes, there's lots and lots of money passing hands.
Yeah, because these have all been financed. Well, look at the guys that are, like we were talking about. I'd like to, William, out some of the other people who are funding all this riot and revolution, because I think that... the idea that the people that are throwing rocks that are kind of, not all of them, but the folks that are dropping off the pallets of bricks and that sort of thing, the idea that they're all being paid, I think is I think most people believe that, but you can't prove it. My guess is you can. And maybe before
you hit walls, right? I mean, these people, they know what they're doing.
Well, right.
And they know the
hold that thought, though. I was giving you a minute and a half to mull that over. And then when we come back, though,
okay,
let's talk about that before we hit the top of the hour, and then, like we do have next week, so we're not going to panic too hard.
Cool.
All right. You're listening to We the People. Our guest is William Kay. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
This old man and me, we're at the bar, and we're having us some beers and swapping, I don't care. Talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace and all the hell we raised. And then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good, people are crazy.
I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. I done said the right thing, but it must have used the wrong line. I've been on the right trail, but it must have used the wrong car. Hit us in a bad place, and I wonder what it's good for. I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. My head is in a bad place, but
it'll have
such a good time.
Dr. John never knew. He never anticipated 2020. It takes on a whole new look. Seriously, these guys are being funded, right? I mean, they're being paid. They're not all living in their mother's basement.
Well, there's probably 2,500 to 3,000 black activists in America. Now, they're working on health equity issues or criminal justice reform issues, and they are full-time employees. These people get a paycheck, they go to office every day, they, you know, have endless meetings where they try to change this or that law, and they reach out to other people. They're full-time employees of that. Many of them harbor sympathies for the radical element. Many of them are secretly members of the radical element. the money is coming down in terms of which foundations are the big players. Ford, number one, the Casey Foundation, the Kellogg Foundation, and then there's a whole bunch of little ones like California Endowment and the California Wellness Foundation, the San Francisco Foundation, Ben and Jerry, all these ones that are contributing smaller amounts. But also BLM itself has sort of done a bit of an end around the big foundations and was appealing to the public through various internet sources. They attracted millions of dollars from some Korean boy band, and their fan army gave them millions of dollars. So once again, I see that tension with the new leadership in Black Lives Matter, like Patrice Kaluers replacing Kaylee Skiles. I'm seeing Black Lives Matter getting money that the Ford Foundation didn't give them, and this is giving them elbow room to once again more directly finance the militant, more extremist elements. But there's this struggle going on there. Some key groups, so there's one called the Racial Equity and Philanthropy Fund, and it's got a, you know, the Ford Foundation and the Kellogg Foundation. There's one called Race and Equity in Philanthropy, and these are all initiatives by the philanthropic groups that are already giving a lot of money to the Black movement, reaching out to further philanthropies.
What about,
probably by my guess, right? What's that?
What about the entertainment industry, Hollywood? I mean, a lot of those folks are giving
tons of money.
Yeah, that's sort of, it's hard to get that information because they don't file Form 990 forms. So, yeah, they are. I'll tell you one thing that caught my attention was that one of the three women that came up with the phrase Black Lives Matter was Alicia Garza. And she really, all of them hit the jackpot now. They're all millionaires. They were definitely not millionaires 5 years ago, but they all are now. And one of her, Alicia Garza's new projects is a thing called Black Futures Lab. And in 2019, they did a direct outreach to 30,000 of America's most politically influential Black people. She's got one of her own NGOs at the time called Black Futures Lab, and they are in direct contact with 30,000. That would be all the celebs, all the sports people. They are in direct contact with them.
Now,
are mobilizing them.
Are they filing how much money they're taking in?
Black Futures Lab?
Yeah.
They're primarily funded by the Ford Foundation and that. So that outreach that they're doing is not so much to get cash directly for themselves as it is to sort of mobilize. And there's another group that I mentioned about that Race and Equity and Philanthropy, same thing. They have got a database of 800 organizations that give money to the Black movement.
Holy
so there's a high
Jeez.
Degree of centralization going on.
Mm.
But yeah, in terms of, you know, how much each individual celeb is giving, it's hard to tell. I know that the Black Lives Matter was attracting a lot of funding, but a lot of the big companies that said they were donating money to the Black Lives Matter were actually donating money to a parallel group called Movement for Black Lives, which the Ford Foundation set up with $100 million endowment. And
God, Lord.
A lot of the Bill Gates, they're giving money to that, but they are actually giving most of their money to the more conservative, like these groups like, you know, the National Association for Colored People, what have you. So they're making it look like they're giving money to BLM, but they really don't want to because they're once again afraid about the liability. So that money is actually going to some of the more staid, larger groups like NAACP and, you know, the Equal Justice Initiative and things like that. These are elements where there's NGOs within the Black movement that have, you know, 50 employees, 100 employees, you know, multi-million-dollar budget. But once again, these are not the groups that want to have anything to do with anything that's criminal.
What about?
I don't think, you know, without a forensic economist or sort of, you know, a real police department really kicking people's doors down, you're never going to find them admitting. Occasionally, you can see that they've given money to groups that are way out there, but for the most part, they know the ball game, right? They know they do not want to leave any paper trail
right. But
they're funding there.
Now, what about George Soros? You hear a lot about him. Does he leave?
You hear too much about him. Okay,
yeah.
Most of the people that are ragging on about George Soros are just these knee-jerk anti-Semites. George Soros' contribution to philanthropy in general in the United States is 1/300. He's not a huge player. The same thing with the Black Lives Movement. Yeah, he is giving millions of dollars, but I've checked it out. The money that he's giving is always to pooled funds. Like they're not doing anything original. He is just contributing money to organizations set up by the Ford Foundation or by Kellogg.
Okay.
There's nothing original about his contribution. He's writing paychecks to these people. I don't see a lot of initiative coming out of them. They're players, but yeah.
Well, except for the district attorneys, he's kind of secretly funding the flipping of some of these district attorney seats in big places like Philadelphia and that sort of thing, so that when these guys get arrested at these protests, they basically don't get prosecuted because the district attorneys aren't prosecuting them. I know he's put in a couple of them. San Francisco
is
another
one. I guard against making too big a deal about Soros.
Yeah,
people tend to exaggerate his influence. He's definitely a player, definitely a billionaire, definitely amongst that crowd. But if you go on the internet or go on the comment column, there's all these people, and you know who they are. These are the old sort of, you know, Jewish conspiracy theorist type, and they like to focus on George Soros. These people have never heard of the Ford Foundation. They've never heard of any other foundations that are contributing one heck of a lot more to this cause than Soros is. But they attach that because he sort of fits sort of a stereotype that they're trying to wedge out there. I've grown really weary of these people. Okay, they are profoundly exaggerating the influence of one individual. You know, a social movement is not a conspiracy. A conspiracy is a very small group of people engaged in clandestine discussions towards a clearly criminal activity. Social movements, much of what they do is legal. And much of what they do is wide open to the public to investigate. All of these foundations file Form 990 forms. You can go see where they spend every dollar. So this is not something happening in secret, and it's a movement. There isn't one person or even one clique of people. There are hundreds of organizations involved, and there's rivalries amongst them. So it's a far greater, you know, the conspiracy theorists like oversimplify social movements.
Right.
And that makes sense. I mean, it's a bad idea because it gets rid of, you know, it gives everybody else a free pass, I guess, and lets them just
roll over
everybody. Yeah,
it's describing the situation. He's a player. He's a villain, no doubt about it, but, you know, you get the impression that somehow he's the eye on top of the pyramid. He's somehow controlling all of these things. When he's not, bottom line. And it's just, obviously, the people who are making such a big deal about him have got their own trippy baggage.
Yeah, they haven't done their homework.
Drag along.
Right, right. Well, that's interesting.
I think a lot of people see George Soros as literally funding the whole thing. I hear that one a lot. It's all George Soros.
Yeah,
I'm like, well, come
nonsense.
On, guys. It can't ever be all
My
one guy.
He's funding less than 5% of the overall black movement, which is considerable. But it's, you know, it's probably, you know, less than, you know, 20% of what the Ford Foundation is giving, and nobody talks about them. You know, you get so big, you just get invisible, right? And that's where they're
at. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, it sounds like
the Ford Foundation will not be mentioned in any news broadcast without their advance authority. That's for sure. Have you ever heard a news broadcaster come out and talk about the Ford Foundation?
No, never. No, no, they're all doing good work. They, you know, there's no news.
Actually,
there.
You don't hear about them at all.
Yeah,
you just
right.
don't hear anything.
No.
Jeez.
So big,
okay, so we have like I don't know, 20 seconds maybe. So you're listening to We the People.
Let's start again.
You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Got that out of the road. Our guest is William Kay. He's on next week. And we're going to talk about some more of this, yes?
It's the best station in America.
Oh, my
With
goodness.
With a Canadian on
Send
it.
Send that man to check.
Yeah.
See you next week.
Thanks, William.